From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, our weekly look at California politics. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly, over there chuckling. I think it's because, see, what you don't know is that we have all of this chitter-chatter before we start, and I think we always end on something really random.
Yes.
And therefore, so we don't come into the serious. It's like we're always chuckling.
We'll release the outtakes on our forthcoming DVD box set. But more on that later.
Behind the scenes with the podcast. So we're sitting here on the week ending May 14th.
And just hours after the Lost finale, which...
I didn't see it. I'm not a big Lost guy, but apparently people are talking about it. It's all on my Facebook of people all...
Yeah.
Are you a Lost guy?
Yeah, well, not for another 8 months.
Lost is an appropriate title for the state of California budget issues.
Perfect segue.
So we're recording this on Thursday as the governor releases option A and option B of a revised budget. I guess option A is if the voters miraculously say yes to some or all of the ballot measures next week. Option B is if they tell everybody in Sacramento to go take a hike. I think they're going to tell them option B, at least if the polls are right.
And luckily, and unfortunately, all of the state parks in which you would want to go take a hike will be closed.
Or fling oneself off a cliff. Okay, so what we learned here is this weekend, we've obviously learned a lot in these revised budget proposals, but we also learned deficit numbers. Let's start macro, if we could. So the governor's administration estimates at least a $15.4 billion deficit by the time the new budget year ends. So in other words,
if Prop C, D, and E pass.
Well, that's what I was going to say, but at least. That's right. Why I said at least.
Oh.
So at least a 15.4, you're not listening, billion-dollar deficit.
What?
At the end of the 2009-2010 fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
If C, D, and E pass, that's the number. If they fail, the number jumps up to $21.3 billion deficit by the end of the fiscal year.
Although, small aside here, that $21 billion number, slightly inflated because it assumes that the state still has a $2 billion reserve.
Hmm.
So, 19, 21, whatever you want to call it, still pretty bad.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, but therein lies part of the discussion that this whole rollout of this budget proposal from the governor has generated about, are these the real numbers? Are we looking at worst-case scenario? It's the whole accusation of scare tactics in the middle of the campaign, folks who are opposed to the measures. I did find interesting – I got a chuckle out of it. One columnist, Tim Hurt from the Ventura County Star, wrote this week a line that I thought was fun, which was said, you know, maybe what we can't handle here is that it's a politician telling the truth.
That's a sign of desperation when politicians start telling the truth.
Right. But, I mean, you know, everywhere you slice it, it's bad. And so these proposals the governor is rolling out on this Thursday, they run the gamut of, like, what I really think is looking for change under the sofa cushions.
Yeah, and it's going to be – and I think a couple of things are notable about this. Number one, there are not going to be any large new revenue plans, whether that's taxes or fees. I mean, what we saw – what was leaked very deliberately this morning was that the large landmark in your area will probably be sold. The L.A. Coliseum, right. The Ventura County Fairgrounds, Cal Expo
here in Sacramento.
San Quentin and Marin County. So you know, we saw that sort of that plan being – that will be part of the governor's plan that we see later this afternoon. But that really the bulk of it is going to be cuts. There will be some new borrowing, I'm sure. The governor has the ability to borrow up to $2 billion from cities and counties.
Well, the governor. The governor and the legislature together.
Right.
Yeah.
The governor's talking about releasing prisoners. Up to 83,000 was the number. Was it 83?
38.
A little dyslexia.
Yeah,
Sorry about that.
There's a big difference in 38 and 83.
But
38,000 prisoners. Right, okay. Now we've gotten your dyslexia behind you. 38,000 prisoners, about half of them undocumented immigrants, apparently.
Right.
But, you know, that's going to go over not so well with some folks. It's going to be controversial about letting people out of prison. Yeah. Right, so there are no good choices. I mean, that's what we're saying. They're all bad.
Yes.
And that's not surprising because that's what people have been saying for a while here. I don't know. You know, and I think this is a source of discussion at some point is how realistic any of these ideas in the governor's revised budget are. I mean, let's take the sale of the property. How fast can you do that? What do you really get for that? How much does that really solve of the problem? I mean,
especially in this real estate market. I mean,
yeah,
I think,
but the Cal Expo one here in Sacramento is a great example. You know, their estimates, it could take 2 years to sell that. And then, you know, exactly what are you selling? What happens to the state fair? But setting that aside, and fried Twinkies and all the rest of it. And the
new Kings Arena.
And yeah, right. But you know, how fast could you count on any of this money? Which I think goes back to the larger debate here about how do you really get out of this problem? You know, after you look for every novel idea out there, how do you really get out of it if you're not going to raise taxes, which every single Republican, including the governor himself, are saying they oppose?
And a lot of the Democrats are saying that even if they don't oppose it necessarily, that it's not a viable option given the dynamics in the legislature. So I get the sense. I mean, we'll see the Democrats counter with something more formal, I think, here in the coming weeks, whether that's through the budget committees doing their work, which usually reflects the wishes of the Democratic majority, or some other sort of release of a plan. I don't think Democrats are going to be looking at big revenue increases either. I mean, the indication I get talking from Democratic sources in the Capitol, there are a number of revenue proposals out there. There's an alcohol tax. There's an oil severance tax. You know, and there's this idea.
There's the porn tax.
Right. All these ideas and a lot of those taxes would be wrapped in a package similar to December, what we saw the Democrats put forth in December, where you lower the taxes on gasoline by a certain number, $4 billion, and then raise
the immaculate taxation returns?
Yes, where you have a revenue-neutral tax package, and then you create new fees. And the long story short is that you end up getting new fees and taxes, bringing a couple billion dollars extra into the general fund, and you can do it with a majority vote, which would, again, be challenged in court, but that's another podcast, perhaps.
Well, it's another podcast, but it's also, I mean, I think at a certain point it has to be done. This idea, this majority vote tax plan, has been out there for so many months now. It wasn't challenged in court before because the court basically threw it out and said, well, there's nothing that's been approved.
Because the governor.
Yeah, there's nothing been approved by the governor and the legislature, so I've got nothing to rule on.
Right.
But, I mean, I think you do need a legal opinion on it at some point, you know, outside of the state capitol. You need the courts to weigh in.
Right. And we saw the governor requesting an explanation just a couple of months ago from the legislative council. Which we wrote about in Capital Weekly. So there is a new opinion, at least from the legislature's lawyers and from the governor's lawyers. I didn't know Ledge Counsel also worked for the administration. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Until they denied my request for the opinion.
You're rewinding a former podcast.
That's
here.
Okay. We'll link to it on the website.
This is like one of those episodes of an 80s sitcom that they would like dump in old footage and go, you remember when? And
actually,
then they would make some noise.
Actually, John, if you watched Lost, this could be like a flash and it's a little time travel. But anyway, moving on. Point being that there's this court battle ready to be joined, and I think that court battles will be part of whatever budget's passed. There's discussion of this money that is now being promised to schools in Proposition 1B. If Proposition 1B fails and some of that $7 billion does not go to schools, there could be a lawsuit over it.
And a lawsuit has already been filed. California Federation of Teachers, who oppose 1B, unlike the California Teachers Association, which supports 1B.
Is CFT opposed to 1B or just 1A, which is linked to 1B?
Well, they filed a lawsuit.
Right.
They filed a lawsuit saying they want the money through the courts. I mean, I guess that's the larger point. But all of that stuff has got to wind its way. And I think also going back inside the Capitol, you know, there are going to be real questions about these cuts, not only about what everyone's willing to do, but I think also, you know, and this was posed on a well-known Republican blog, I'll just say it that way, this morning. Will Republicans stand up and agree to make those cuts? Because, you know, one of the dynamics that has happened in the Capitol a lot is there's been discussion about cutting the size of government on the Republican side of the aisle, but they haven't really voted for cut packages before. There's been a hesitancy in some members on that side of the aisle to vote for the cuts. Are they going to vote for the cuts? Are they going to stand up for them?
And are they
going to be specific about how you cut enough to get down to the...
And I think at some point, you know, Democrats are going to ask Republicans to put up those votes. I mean, if there are no revenue if there are no major revenue increases as part of this budget deal, that Democrats are going to want to probably protect some of their members where these cuts are unpopular. Members in marginal districts from having to put up votes on what will be very unpopular budget decisions. I mean, you know, the bottom line is nobody wants to tell their constituents they had to cut these programs. There's a reason why you don't have as many firefighters or as many cops on the street, or why your libraries are closed, or why, you know, your state office buildings are, you know, your DMV isn't open on Fridays anymore. You know, whatever it is, whatever it's going to be. Some of these cuts are going to be unpopular even among Republicans.
Well, one of the things that I know you have written about and a few others have written a couple of things that I think are worth noting in the last week is some of the options being taken off the table because of the federal stimulus package.
Right.
The stimulus package somewhat ties the hands of the legislature.
In some ways, because the stimulus dollars that are coming into the state, about $50 billion total estimates, large chunks of that money, several dozens of billions of dollars, we'll say, are tied to a basic the state has to maintain what they call a maintenance of effort. They have to provide the services at the same level. So you can't – what the feds wanted to avoid is where, you know, state cuts back various services. They take federal money to, you know, more federal money to provide less service and then –
Right,
that realize that savings for the state.
Thus defeating the purpose from Washington, D.C.'s perspective of stimulating the economy or helping people through a rough patch.
Right. And so we saw this where they had to pass some statutory changes on Medi-Cal, in order to capture the federal stimulus dollars. But in education, for example, there are lots of questions now about what the minimum maintenance of effort is and how much – money in the education budget can be cut out in order to not lose that federal money. And that's going to be a big consideration going forward. And so Democrats now, I mean, there's always been a lot of talk about how the hands of budget makers in the state have been tied by the voters, by formulaic budget spending. And now you add this other layer on, it's sort of more rope or increased bondage. I don't know how you want to describe
it. That's definitely a different podcast.
But you know, but it looks like, you know, there's about 38 to 40% of the budget that's quote unquote discretionary spending, mm-hmm. and that's going to mean with a smaller pool, a smaller area to make those cuts are going to be that much deeper with a big budget hole.
A fascinating part of this that got reported by the LA Times. End of last week, beginning of this week, can't remember exactly when it dropped, and it's still somewhat unclear. The message from Washington, or also getting the message inside the state capitol in Sacramento, how this works. But the story reported was that you know, the state made a number of cutbacks to the salary of in-home healthcare workers.
Right.
A lot of those in-home healthcare workers are members of SEIU, of the labor union. And then apparently there's some kind of provision in the federal stimulus package that says those home health care workers' salaries cannot be cut. And if they are, the state could forfeit or could have to forfeit as much as almost $7 billion in federal stimulus money.
Right.
All over about a $75 million savings to the state by cutting the salary of these in-home healthcare workers. And so the accusations have been that SEIU lobbied quite heavily the federal government.
Shocking.
And federal officials.
Shocking.
Democrats in Washington to make sure that the state – that, you know, that the provisions were like they wanted them. And so now you've got the state government faced on this possibly.
Possibly.
Faced with this decision of reinstating those salary levels and therefore having to spend more money or losing a tremendous amount of federal stimulus money.
And this was the first time, I think, when this started coming out, this is the first time I can remember the Schwarzenegger administration coming close to taking a shot at the Obama administration. The governor seemed outraged at the concept that they weren't free to make these cuts to IHSS workers, to these home health care workers. And there have been accusations inside the administration that the memo that came down from the federal government was the equivalent of being written on the back of a napkin. It had no letterhead. And so I don't get the sense that the administration is rushing to backfill this money.
Also, lots of grumbling, too, about conference calls that happened that SEIU was allowed to sit in on, even though they were government-to-government conference calls. I mean, there's a whole odd something to this. Something doesn't smell quite
right. And it sounds like SEIU found somebody in Washington with some decision-making power who ruled in their favor. Now, it's a question of how much ultimate decision-making power this person at the in D.C. has, and I think it's a little unclear still what the final word is from Washington on this particular issue.
The other problem that we got a little bit more at the end of the week here was the cash flow problems of the state of California. We've kind of talked about this before, but it bears repeating that the budget deficit and the cash problems of the state are related but not the same.
They're different.
We did this last week of you having a what do we say? You had a $50,000 salary. We went through this entire what if.
Right.
I'm not sure you know. Maybe we should say you have a $20,000 salary.
How did I get my pay cut so dramatically? Hey, you know, these are I look like a state employee to you?
These are tough times. Yes. Aren't you furloughed a couple of days a week, a month?
Self-imposed. Yes.
But so we got some new estimates of the size of that. I think that was at the end of last week. You know, possibly as much as $23 billion short. On Wednesday of this week, State Treasurer Bill Lockyer formally wrote a letter to the Secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, and said, look, we're going to basically need you to watch our back effectively in the way we go out to the market and get our money. And here's effectively what Lockyer's asking, because I had to kind of like piece this together by layman's terms. So the state goes out and gets short-term loans from investors on Wall Street. We've done it before. We're clearly going to have to do it again, though there are real questions whether we can get as much as we need. Which
because
goes
credit,
back to the budget about cutting spending.
Because credit's tight and because our bond.
Well, first of all, no one's ever gone out and gotten as much as we might need.
$23 billion.
Maybe.
Right.
Depending on the ballot measures and all kinds of other groovy things. So effectively, we go out and we ask for money from investors. The investors are going to say, I don't know, California's credit rating's not so hot, all kinds of things. We're going to need what are called credit enhancements. We're effectively going to need banks to say, they will make good on this if the state of California defaults. Banks charge a fee to the state for that, for those credit enhancements. The concern now is that the banks are jittery because of the global financial crisis and that the banks are not going to be so thrilled with stepping up and being our backers if we default. And no one is saying we're going to default, but this is the process you have to go through. So what Lockyer is now asking the feds is to tell the banks, don't worry, if for some reason the state of California defaults, we will pay the investors back. We will take you off the hook. We'll effectively take these, ready for it, toxic assets. I'm using that. Off of your hands. Don't worry. We'll take care of the California debt if for some reason all hell breaks loose. That's I think, fairly unprecedented. Lockyer is suggesting that the feds don't need to approve any new laws. I mean, there has been a push in the California congressional delegation and others to kind of make all of this happen. Lockyer's letter to Geithner says you already have the power under TARP, under the Troubled Asset Relief Program,
the bailout,
to do this or to at least guarantee California in this way. But it's another sign of the complexity of the times and the state's financial problems. All of it. It's a mess.
Yeah, and the pieces are sort of being lined up now for the next end game here. I mean, I think this, you know, bringing this full circle, I mean, the proposal we're going to see this afternoon, we've seen the governor do this before. I mean, I don't mean to be terribly skeptical. I don't mean to downplay the severity of the budget crisis in any way. But we've seen the governor come out and propose a what I've called the medium rare budget, you know, something that's extra bloody. That, you know, in January of last year, he proposed closing state parks and releasing prisoners and all these things.
So you would call these two proposals medium rare and rare?
Yeah,
today?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. You know, and when we get to Tartar, I'll let you know.
Raw.
But I'm not saying that these will be completely bloodless, that this process will be bloodless. I think there will be, if for no other reason because of recent history, there will be some skepticism about this proposal from all corners come you know 3 o'clock this afternoon.
You keep talking about it as though it hasn't happened yet.
I can't believe. See, this is so Lost-esque. If only you had seen the show.
Mm.
It's all time travel, time loops.
Okay, so let's go back and wrap up with special election is on Tuesday. The ballot measures are finally going to be weighed in on by the voters. Nobody's feeling very positive. Maybe the optimistic governor would say otherwise, but we may wake up on Wednesday with a new restriction on the California Citizens Compensation Commission, 1F, and that's it.
Uh-huh. And how does that help the budget exactly?
That helps it exactly probably none.
Right.
So do you think it's safe to say they all go down? Is there any chance?
Safe?
I think there's actually a chance that 1D, the money from early childhood programs, could pass if you look at the polling, if the polling's to be believed.
You know, the only thing that's so erratic about polling, it's like the problem with polling with legislative races.
Only thing that's erratic about polling?
Well, I mean, in a race like this is the turnout model and how many people turn out and who comes to the polls and who's in. I mean, look, every number I've seen indicates that these measures are going to fail on Tuesday, but, you know, that's why I'm a reporter and not a psychic. I'll react to things as they happen and analyze them as they happen.
And all the models are low turnout too.
Yeah, clearly.
So it's all about who gets their people to the polling place. And you know, I was going to say too, you know, we had a little bit more of skirmishing in the paid media department this week. We had the first no on 1A television ad that I've seen playing some here in Sacramento. I mean, they don't have anywhere near as much money to put theirs out as the governor's allies had to put their yes on 1A ad.
But no campaigns never need as much money.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about that ad? I think this is worth talking about briefly, is they go completely after the reserve fund. They don't go after anything else. The ad is all about the reserve fund and how it could allow pork barrel spending.
Right.
Now, I don't want to quibble with the opponents of 1A. In this, but you know, it's all how you define pork barrel spending. The 1A essentially says the money would go toward infrastructure projects and paying back debt, bonded debt. Now, is infrastructure pork barrel? A spokesman for the campaign said, well, you had the bridge to nowhere. That was infrastructure in Washington.
That was in Alaska, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, that was a federal project is the point.
Right.
But I mean, you know, maybe. But there seem like there are, you know, I don't want to run their campaign for them, but there's so many other things that you could maybe ask about 1A. Like, does 1A affect, will it force cuts in higher education
right.
and social services because they're not all protected under Prop 98? You know, there seem to be other questions other than, is the reserve fund going to be spent properly?
Well, and the thing is, on the reserve fund,
it's a minutia.
The reserve fund, I mean, if we're going to delve into the minutia, the reserve fund is largely spoken for because the people who have the first crack at the reserve fund are the schools, if 1B passes. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, I think the most effective message against Prop 1A is the tax issue, is the fact that a vote for 1A amounts to three more years of higher taxes. I think all polling has shown that that's the most effective issue. The problem is that the people with the money for the No on 1A campaign are, you know, SEIU and the California Federation of Teachers and the Faculty Association. And these
and
are
it's
not
the tax that they're angry about.
Right.
It's the possible cuts given the spending limit.
Right. These are groups that have advocated for higher taxes for other services in the past. And so I think that's, you know, it's almost a symbolic thing. They put up this ad in the closing weeks of the campaign to kind of try to dance on the grave a little bit and make sure that these propositions really do die. But in terms of, I mean, if they had to run if this was a close campaign, would we see the messaging change? Perhaps. But I just don't get the sense that they feel like they need to be as precise and as hard-hitting with their messaging as the Yes campaign needed to be and arguably was not.
So to wrap this up, I mean, so we think we wake up on Wednesday morning, the 20th, and most, if not all, of the important measures have failed. Do you sense that we're going to get going here fast at the Capitol?
Well, you know, Senate leader Daryl Steinberg this week said that that he did not anticipate a large a long standoff. And, you know, if there are no revenues, if we're not talking about two-thirds, we could get out of here pretty quick.
You mean if there are no revenue increases, technically?
If there are no tax increases.
Right.
You know, if there are revenue increases that only require 41 votes and in the assembly, simple majority votes in both houses.
And the signature of the governor, which is key.
Right.
I mean, will the governor ever get behind that plan?
Right. And it depends on what that plan looks like. We haven't seen – I mean, there are a lot of individual proposals from Democrats that have been around for months about ways to increase revenue, you know, accelerated tax collections, you know, collect withholdings on independent contractors, alcohol taxes, gasoline fees. You know, we've seen a whole gamut of these. If the Democrats can get together with the governor and put together a package of which would probably be mostly cuts and some additional revenues, then the Republicans are really irrelevant to this entire debate.
And until then, we will sit here and watch the storm front roll in.
Bring the popcorn.
Wait for the voters to have their say. All right. Well, we'll have more to talk about next week, hopefully. Something new to talk about. We'll be digging out. Maybe we're going to do a special post-election podcast.
We will do an election, post-election podcast, and we can make it special if you'd like.
All right. We'll have to
wear a bow tie.
We'll have to figure this out, but keep your eyes open. We may try to do something soon afterwards to kind of piece through the results.
Oh, I see where you're going. Like a Tuesday.
Well,
podcast.
Wednesday.
Okay.
You're not going to do it. I don't want to do it before the polls close. Although that might be somewhat presumptuous, but not. Anyway, we'll figure it out. Stay tuned.
The polls will close.
For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We obviously had no ending. See you next time.